seated.
Court is ready to hear argument in 4429 Lexington Insurance Company against Strayhorn.
May it please the court, Mr. Curtis L. Frisby Jr. for the argument of the petitioner. Petitioner is reserved 5 minutes.
Hold the court. Good morning. This is an important case of statutory construction. It has to do with the unauthorized insurer statute and the surplus lines insurer statute. Texas is the second largest market in the United States for surplus lines insurance. Lexington, one of your petitioners here today, is the largest surplus lines insurer in the United States. American International is the second largest in the United States. Landmark is a sister company, also a surplus lines insurer in the United States. I make this point just to show that these are not outlaw, fly-by-night companies. These are substantial companies operating in the state. This case is important because it's being watched by all the surplus lines insurers in the country, and it's also being watched by every plaintiff's lawyer. And the reason is the holding and the logic of the Court of Appeals. What the Court of Appeals has done in this case is said that an eligible surplus lines insurer who is subject to and governed by Article 114-2, if it makes a misstep and it violates one of the sections of 114-2, then it becomes, that transaction becomes an unauthorized transaction. The court then leaps to the conclusion, if you have an unauthorized transaction, then the insurer changes its status and becomes an unauthorized insurer. And from that conclusion, we go to the conclusion that the unauthorized insurer is subject to Article 114-1, a different statute, and is subject to the penalties there. In this particular case, the penalty that is being discussed is an unauthorized insurer is responsible for paying a premium tax.
Do you think, I didn't see this anywhere in the briefs, has the restructuring and perhaps change of the law since these provisions made any difference in the case?
It makes the case even more important for this court. In 2003, the court changed the definition of who pays the taxes under the unauthorized insurance premium taxes. They changed it to say an insurer. Rather than saying an unauthorized insurer, they said an insurer shall pay the tax. And they defined the insurer as an authorized insurer, an unauthorized insurer, and an eligible surplus lines insurer. In that same legislature, for whatever reason, they also made it, changed the law effective April of 2005 in this year. And they changed that definition in what was supposed to have been an omnibus bill that was had non-substantive changes. They changed it to say, back to the language we had before, and said an unauthorized insurer shall pay. So we are now in the situation as of April of 2005, where we're back in the same situation we were back in 1993 when these amendments came into effect. So this case has implications beyond a statute that has already expired, no longer in effect. But what's happening in this case now is the plaintiff's lawyers are now taking the position that if you follow the same logic of the Court of Appeals, where you have an eligible surplus lines insurer who is admittedly governed by one statute, Article 114-2, and he makes a misstep in that statute, 114-2, then that transaction becomes known as an unauthorized transaction. And then they go to the conclusion that that transforms the insurer somehow into an unauthorized insurer, now subject to the penalties in a different provision of the code, Article 114-1, dealing with unauthorized insurers. But here's where the plaintiff's lawyers want to follow this logic, and this is where they get off track here. They say the logic of that is you're subject to the penalty that unauthorized insurers' contracts with their policyholders are unenforceable in this state, which means that two things happen. The plaintiff's lawyer takes the position if the contract is unenforceable by the unauthorized insurer, then the insurance company has lost all of its defenses, all of its contract defenses and its common law defenses. The surplus lines insurer is looking at this case because what they are wondering now is, is every single surplus lines policy that they have written in this state since the 1990s now in jeopardy of what I now refer to as gotcha litigation. Gotcha litigation happens and is already happening, and we have evidence before this court on it from the amicus briefs, is instead when there is a dispute between the insured and the insurer over a coverage position, which happens every day. Instead of the coverage being the principal issue, what happens is the discovery is directed to the placement of that policy. They want to know if every single provision and every rule and regulation that has been adopted by the insurance department for the placement of that policy, have they been followed? Because if there has been a misstep, the plaintiff's lawyers will say, then the transaction is an unauthorized transaction, no longer governed by Article 114-2. It is now a transaction that's governed by Article 114-1. You lose your defenses, and essentially the case gets to be an impossible burden for the insurance company from that point forward. This is not something that we're making up. This is not something that's fanciful. This is something that's already happened. You've seen one amicus brief filed by Varco in this case, and you've seen the responses that we filed to show that in the Houston courts, they tried this exact theory out. You've also seen the Smithy amicus brief and what was filed yesterday, I understand, the amicus briefs of two other insurers where they have admittedly they were eligible surplus lines insurers. It was so certificated by the insurance department. They had used a licensed surplus lines agent, and they paid their taxes. But instead, skillful, inventive plaintiff's counsel in those cases found a number of errors in the placement of that policy and convinced the judge to say that they lost all their defenses. I bring this up because I say it could not have been the legislative intent to reach this result.
One thing that puzzles me here is that 114-1 talks about an unauthorized insurer. And as I understand the argument by the comptroller that an insurer may be unauthorized as to a particular policy. Is that your understanding of the argument that, yes, you issued all these other policies and they were through agents, but these policies were not issued, and so with respect to those policies, you're unauthorized?
The comptroller's position is clearly that, and that was the opinion of the Court of Appeals, is that you have to look at this on a policy-by-policy, a transaction-by-transaction basis, and you determine on a transaction-by-transaction basis whether you're wearing the black hat of an unauthorized insurer who's not allowed to do business in this state, or whether you're wearing a white hat of the eligible surplus lines insurer.
But you're making unauthorized and ineligible synonymous. And it seems to me that you could be generally eligible but conduct an unauthorized transaction. Those terms don't seem mutually exclusive.
There is no doubt that an eligible surplus lines insurer could make a mistake. And whether you call it an unauthorized transaction or you call it a mistake or a deficiency or unlawful or illegal makes no difference. The question that is before this court is what happens at that point? The Court of Appeals leaped from that conclusion, we would say without any logic or any support, to say that transforms the insurer into an unauthorized insurer, then subject to a different statute.
As to that transaction.
As to that transaction.
And let me ask you about an enforcement mechanism. I mean, if it didn't work that way, how would the requirement that it go through the authorized agent ever be enforced? I mean, couldn't the insurer keep records of the placement issues and the collection of the tax?
How does it get enforced is the first part of the question. It is our position in this case that if an eligible surplus lines insurer who's governed by 114-2 makes a mistake, an error, has an unauthorized transaction, if you want to call it that.
But it's not their error. It's the agent's error.
It could be either one. It makes no difference, I think, under the statute, but an error is made. And it is our position that they should be penalized. They should be punished But since they are governed by Dash 2, and since they violated Dash 2, they should be subject to the penalties of Dash 2. There are two sections in Article 114-2 that deal with the penalties, one particularly having to do with violations of Section 8 and 9, and the other with violations of any other provision of that statute. And they tell you what the penalties are, and the penalties can be draconian. They can be death penalty sanctions to kick them out of the state so that they can no longer practice here. They can also be subject to fines, penalties, cease and desist orders, things of that nature. So that is the position. We submit that any carrier who is eligible, has gone through the process of approaching the state of the Department of Insurance, and who's gone through the process of putting their capital and their reserves, put all that information before them, they've received a certificate, they are recognized as such, they're operating lawfully in this state. If they make a mistake as a part of their surplus lines business, they certainly should be punished according to whatever the state department is. The insurance department wants to do, but they would do that under Dash 2, not under Dash 1.
But the nature of the mistake, I mean, the nature of the mistake here is not assuring that its agent is collecting this fee, right?
The nature of the problem here, or if there is a mistake here, if you want to call it, is that many, many years after the fact, when Lexington Insurance Company was audited by the State Board of Insurance, it could not prove that each one of the policies that...
No, I understand that, but in terms of the overall statutory scheme, the problem it's attempting to address is perhaps the agent that doesn't collect the fee and putting the responsibility of that on the eligible surplus lines carrier to ensure that that happens. There's no one else who could ensure that that happens.
Your Honor, I think I understand your question. There are, if you want to call it, holes in the statute right now. You cannot ensure that in every single transaction the state will get its premium taxes paid. For instance, if the agent takes the money and disappears and goes to Bermuda tomorrow with the premium dollars and with the taxes, and we don't get it back, by law, the insurance company still must insure, but the state's not going to get its premium taxes. There's no fix for that anywhere in the statute. There is no fix for it in the statute if, for instance, if the agent for some other reason doesn't pay the money. The agent is the only one who ever collects the taxes, and the agent is the only one who ever gives it to the Department of Insurance. The surplus lines insurer never sees the taxes, doesn't know whether it's collected, and doesn't know whether it's paid, and has no records to show it, and has no way to know it. Remember, they are out of state, and they are largely passive in these transactions. When these transactions come up, literally speaking, what happens is an application for insurance comes in over a fax or through the mail in some fashion to them, and it is looked at by the insurance company. They apply their underwriting guidelines. They set it whether they will accept or reject it, and it goes back to the surplus lines agent, who is an agent for a regular recording agent or an MGA agent, who is the agent for the insured. And so the surplus lines insurer in a typical transaction has no contact with the insured, never talks to them, never sees them, never talks to their regular agent, but generally corresponds only with the licensed surplus lines agent in the state. And the laws in this state are set up so that it is the agent who is responsible for compliance with most of the rules for compliance with the statutes in this state. The dispute obviously arose when the audit occurred and the state said that Lexington owes millions of dollars in premium taxes. Lexington's response was very simple. You are suing me under Section 11A of the Unauthorized Insurance Statute. And Section 11A says very simply, every unauthorized insurer shall pay this tax annually. And Lexington says, I'm not an unauthorized insurer. And it is undisputed in this case that during the entire time, Lexington had a certificate of eligibility and was deemed eligible as an eligible surplus lines carrier. So the question is, in our statutory construction we have here today, is what were the circumstances under which this statute was created when the statute was amended in 1993? What was the object that was sought to be obtained? And what are the consequences of this type of an interpretation here? We know the circumstances because we are privileged to have with us. We have at least two House bill analyses, and we also now have the printed record of the discussions of the committees who passed these bills. And we know what the circumstances were. We know that there was ambiguity in the courts. There was ambiguity in the State Board of Insurance over the differences between a surplus lines insurer and an eligible surplus lines insurer. The object was twofold, and it was stated in the legislative history we have. Number one, to make it clear that eligible surplus lines insurers are not unauthorized insurers, and they will not be subject to the penalties of Section 1.
Thank you, Counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Story will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, Your Honors, this is a tax case. The legislature has required tax to be paid on every premium dollar written on Texas risk by an unauthorized or unlicensed insurer. And the controller's limited inquiry in this case is simply to determine which of the three categories the tax should be levied under. The statute reads that except as to premiums procured by a licensed agent from a surplus lines insurer, unauthorized tax will be paid. And that's all that we're saying here.
Would this theory be applied to other kinds of insurers who made similar types of errors or intentionally operated in these ways so as to become, in some sense, unauthorized?
No.
Why not?
Because the structure of the unauthorized laws expressly separate the business of doing surplus lines insurance under the surplus lines laws or independently procured insurance where the tax is paid. And they don't even purport to address the fully authorized licensed market.
If an admitted carrier issued a policy other than as provided by law, would that carrier be an unauthorized insurer as to that policy?
Certainly not from a tax standpoint, which again is all that we're looking at.
But I don't understand why.
Because there are separate premium taxes that are paid by authorized insurers based on the premiums that they write. And that's the only tax that the controller is enforcing, as well as maintenance taxes. There are some others. But they would never come under the category of unauthorized because they are authorized. And, Your Honors, perhaps the simplest way to think about this is unauthorized just means not authorized.
But the trouble I'm having is it says unauthorized insurer, and the insurer is doing some things right.
That's correct.
Even the comptroller concedes that it wasn't $6 million, it's only $1 million.
Right? Absolutely.
But it's kind of hard to think of the carrier authorized as to some acts and unauthorized as to other acts.
I suggest two answers on that. One is that in the surplus lines business in particular, it's clear the legislature has required all surplus lines policies to be procured and placed through licensed agents. That's the sine qua non of a surplus lines transaction. We, I think, fundamentally agree on that. That is the system for regulating surplus lines. So if there is not a surplus lines agent that brings it into the tax category from the controller's point of view, the default category is the unauthorized tax. That is the structure and the wording of the unauthorized tax. The second answer is, much as the court said in the Mid-American case, that really surplus lines insurers are a special class of unauthorized insurers. They're not outlaws. We're not saying that they are or even that they've done anything specifically wrong here. But in every state, and in Texas at the beginning of this audit period, the insurers are described as unauthorized insurers who are eligible to write surplus lines coverage under the provisions of the surplus lines law. So, for the most part, they perform a very fine function. We have no quarrel with that. And we simply say that in order to come under the tax heading of surplus lines laws, you need a surplus lines agent. And it really is that simple of a bright line test from the controller's point of view. And I would say, moreover, in response to some of the earlier arguments, we would not look behind the transaction to see if there are other flaws in it, because that is far beyond the controller's interest and, in fact, the controller's authority here. So we're not making a regulatory judgment. We're just looking to see how the tax ought to be paid.
Is the tax a penalty?
No. And that's why I say it's at the same rate for all non-authorized insurance. So we're not singling out anyone to say you have to pay some extra fine. We're simply looking for which heading the tax should go under according to the statutory structure.
I'm hearing you say that as a follow-up to Justice Heck's question, that it's not a matter of whether the insurer is unauthorized. You're not saying that, are you? The surplus lines carriers here are not unauthorized surplus lines carriers in Texas.
They would retain their eligibility, so nothing about the tax assessment challenges that.
So what you're saying is that these individual transactions are unauthorized.
Yes, because that's, again, the way the tax is structured. It says except as to premiums procured by the licensed surplus lines agent from an eligible insurer. So it really is looking at the individual premiums. And some policies are going to be fine. They're going to go through a surplus lines agent. Presumably the agent will collect and pay the tax, which is the way the system is set up. On other premiums, if they are not procured by a licensed agent or if we don't have any evidence that they were, then the default position is it's going to be under the unauthorized tax.
Okay, now if it's the transactions, and if I'm reading the briefing correctly, my understanding is it's the agent, certainly, who collects and then remits the tax.
When it's a surplus lines transaction.
Right, well, which is what we're talking about.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, that's the problem in the case, is that we have a number of transactions where there's no agent identified, and for all intents and purposes, there's no agent from whom to collect the tax.
Well, and there's not any mystery that these are surplus lines carriers. They're intending to enter into surplus lines, placing surplus lines insurance.
That's correct.
So that's what we're talking about, right? And so if that's true, then it's the agent who collects and then remits the tax, why isn't the remedy to go to the agent?
Because there has to be an agent. And in these cases, we don't know that there is, much less who it is. I mean, that's a fundamental problem. And Lexington and the controller have had some debate about the records that they keep or are supposed to keep. We think they should be keeping track of these because they are issuing coverage that purports to be surplus lines.
But the way the statute is written, the duty then, it appears to me, is not upon the carrier, the surplus lines carrier, to collect and remit the tax. So the duty appears statutorily to be placed on the agent, and yet you're asking the carrier to take on a duty that it didn't have by statute.
Well, they have it in default of there being an agent, because the statutes, again, accept the lawful business of surplus lines done according to the surplus lines laws. That obviously requires an agent. The tax in particular requires that the premiums be procured by a licensed surplus lines agent, or else the unauthorized tax will be paid. So in every instance where we have identified an agent, we have not tried to charge Lexington for any tax. And we don't go back to see if the agent actually paid the tax. We don't go to look and see if the coverage was really eligible. We don't look at anything else except whether there's an agent. Because if there isn't, then the state comes up short on taxes.
Well, it seems to be a pretty, inefficient manner of going about doing this audit. In terms of, if you start off as well, we're going to say, all right, there's $6 million in liability here. But, okay, now it looks like there's only $1 million. Pretty inexact kind of process, isn't it?
Your Honor, it's worked out that way in this instance because this was the first audit on surplus lines carriers for this tax. So, as in the House of Lloyd case, you know, there has to come a first time for everything. They were subject to the tax under the statute. But what we did was try to figure out which of the policies were actually placed as surplus lines policies, because every one of those is supposed to be filed with the stamping office. So we did a comparison there. We asked the Lexington for any information it had on did they actually have licensed surplus lines agents on these policies. They came up with a lot of that, and, of course, we took those things out of the assessment. And we even all say this is the Attorney General's initiative, was to go back to the stamping office and say, please make another run and look at every policy there that's got one of these carriers on it and the insureds, and see if you can tell us whether some of the others need to come out. And indeed, we found some more.
It's not an apples and apples comparison.
It's not, Your Honor. But again, what we would be asking for is something as simple as a transmittal letter. They are surplus lines insurers who do millions of dollars. They write premiums on millions of dollars of Texas risk. They know that coverage has to comply with the surplus lines law. They tell their producers to make it so. they know that the heart and soul of Surplus Lines is the local Surplus Lines agent. And yet, for some reason, they don't have so much of a transmittal letter to say that the Texas coverage went through that agent.
So, Mr. Story, would you please respond to the comment that if your side prevails, if you prevail, that Lexington and other similarly situated companies will or could lose their affirmative defenses in a trial court?
Your Honor, that's a serious concern, and one is not presented in this case. As I say, the only thing we're looking at is which of the three headings the tax should go under. We're not challenging their ability to enforce their contracts. In fact, our brief points out that there is some conflict in the laws on that, because the Surplus Lines law specifically says that Surplus Lines carriers can enforce their contracts unless there is an intentional and material violation. So perhaps it sounds like at some point the court may need to sort out some of those issues, but that certainly is not addressed by this case. It's a very, very limited case just addressing the tax. Your Honors, I have a few more points I'd like to cover. I guess one is on agency. I think the Weston case, which we cited to the court, which was a River Fuse case, pointed out that the Surplus Lines agent is an agent of both the insurer and the insured on different tasks. We aren't saying that Lexington went out and got this business by selling through its own agents, and that's not necessary to the case either. Again, the only thing we're looking for is a Surplus Lines agent somewhere in the transaction. We think they should have been able to show that. The current state of the law, Justice Heck, you asked about that, I think it's fundamentally the same in that, for example, eligible Surplus Lines insurers are defined as insurers who are not authorized in Texas. It doesn't say they're evil, it just says they're not authorized. And yet they are eligible to write the same risks that they're writing now. And the tax will be paid by them unless it is paid as a Surplus Lines transaction, a true Surplus Lines transaction paid by the agent. So the same basic exception is there in the statute. And don't recall if I've said, but the basic setup is the same all around the country. I cited the court to some cases from other states for the very, very simple proposition that Surplus Lines insurers are simply a special class of unauthorized insurers. And I think that was the goal of the legislature in 1993. Not to say that they were wholly different, but that they were a special class of unauthorized insurers who have the permission of the state to write coverage under the guidelines that the legislature set out. If you have no further questions, I ask the Court of Appeals to be affirmed. And
thank you, Counsel.
I think it's important to see what the legislature did in 1993 when it amended the statute, when it said that there was confusion in the State Board of Insurance and there's confusion in the courts with regard to the differences between an unauthorized insurer and an eligible Surplus Lines insurer. What did they do? What did our statutes say? We've given you a handout that has it in front of you if you can compare. Prior to 1993, the confusion stemmed from the fact that the definition of an eligible Surplus Lines insurer included the words unauthorized insurer. So the legislature took care of that problem. When they redefined what an eligible Surplus Lines insurer was, they effected the object that they were trying to accomplish, and they took out the words unauthorized insurer. In fact, in the entire purpose section for 114-2, they took out the words unauthorized insurer and they put in eligible Surplus Lines carrier. This demonstrated the intent all the way along to show that an eligible Surplus Lines insurer is not an unauthorized insurer.
Well, but what couldn't you just say an eligible Surplus Lines carrier is eligible to write authorized insurance? And if they write a policy not through a Surplus Lines agent, it's not an authorized transaction, and they become an unauthorized insurer as to that transaction.
Right. They're not authorized to write authorized policies, Your Honor. The policies that they're authorized to write are Surplus Lines insurance. It is insurance that is not written by our eligible admitted carriers. It is insurance that they won't write for whatever reason, either in the limits that are needed or in areas that they just don't cover. For instance, our energy industry is the largest consumer of surplus lines insurance.
But what does one do if the threshold determination of what's authorized or unauthorized is whether there was an agent? And you can't tell whether there was one or not. What's the default position?
I don't believe the threshold determination of whether it's lawful surplus lines insurance has to do with whether or not an agent was used. There's no doubt the statute requires that an agent be used in each one of these transactions.
And what if you can't tell if one was used?
That is exactly what's happened to us.
Right.
Remember that these policies are claims-made policies, which generally means that they expire at the end of 1 year. These are not occurrence policies that people keep. When you get an audit on an out-of-state company like Lexington, who has no statutory obligation to keep any records whatsoever, and said, I want you to tell me who your agent was in this particular transaction in 1992, you should not be surprised at all that we would not have any records that would identify that, because it is the agent who has the responsibility to maintain these records, to collect the tax, to give it to the state,
and they appear to agree with that if all Lexington can do is show we had an agent, they're not intending to come against Lexington if the agent didn't collect the taxes. But they have no way to know whether an agent was actually retained or not.
That is correct, Your Honor. They put the entire burden on us to go search for this and try and prove this fact. They put the burden on the only party who doesn't have the records or any way to do this. And as you can tell, they initially assessed us with over $6 million in taxes. And after we spent all of our time going out trying to find brokers, and we reduced the taxes down to something over $1 million. We couldn't find many of the brokers. They were out of business. They were gone.
No, I understand that. But the rule that you would say is that surplus lines carriers have no duty to come forward and prove they had an agent.
There is no statutory duty that says we are required to come forward and prove that we have an agent. I think probably, Your Honor, you can understand this best if you understand. I think under Article 114-1 in Section 2B, you need to understand that the legislature intended to exempt eligible surplus lines insurers from the application of Dash 1. That is what it says. It says the lawful transaction of surplus lines insurance pursuant to Article 114-2 is exempt from the provisions of 114-1. And that, we say, is the conduct of the surplus lines business by an eligible surplus lines carrier who has been deemed eligible by the state. And if it makes a mistake, then it is subject to penalty, but the penalties are under Dash 2.
Thank you, Counselor. The cases argued this morning are submitted, and the briefs and argument are submitted during the court.